Thanks for listening to Access, or I was going to say Access Utah. Usually you would during this time. But on Fridays, it's Behind the Headlines. And just a couple of minutes here, Tom Williams with Katie Swain, to encourage your participation in the programming by way of your financial support. Katie, the theme for today, we've been talking all through Morning Edition. I've been enjoying the historical facts. And one salient historical fact, about, I think it's a couple of years now, we made some programming changes. And one of the changes we made was to bring on a couple of programs from our friends at KCPW in Salt Lake City. One of those is their very fine program, Behind the Headlines, their news roundup with Salt Lake Tribune reporters and host Roger McDonough. That has proved quite popular. And we're glad. Popular with us on staff, too. We love
certainly.
It.
I certainly enjoy it on Fridays. It's a good thing to put in the same spot as Access Utah. There's some similarities there. Political coverage, current events and whatnot. And if you're a fan of hearing Access Utah or Behind the Headlines during this hour, then this is a great time to participate in our fund drive. Give us a call, go online, and donate.
And here's the way to do that. Toll-free number, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or online to upr.org. Your support in whatever amount helps the programming, and specifically right now, Behind the Headlines.
And we do have one thank you really quick. John Bushman from Hiram called in and made his pledge. We'd love to hear from you as well. Let's make Behind the Headlines, let's see, a lot of support for it. That'll help. But, you know, us decide other programming decisions. So give us a call, 800-826-1495, or upr.org.
Or upr.org, and thank you.
Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the Friday news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, a former Missionary Training Center president is accused of sexual assault. Representative John Curtis is accused of having ignored sexual misconduct allegations against his chief of police when he was mayor of Provo. Also, outgoing State Representative Mike Noel gets flack for not disclosing how he could benefit from the massive water pipeline project he advocated for in the legislature. And to stay or to go, Utahns contemplate ditching Facebook as a global movement to delete your account gains steam. Joining me to talk about these stories, Salt Lake Tribune Justice reporter Jessica Miller is here. Welcome, Jessica.
Hello.
Also, Salt Lake Tribune Digital Life reporter Sean P. Means is here. Good morning, Sean.
Hello.
Public Lands reporter Brian Mathley, good morning to you, Brian, and welcome.
Hi, as usual, it's great to be here.
Thanks for being here. Brian, and editorial page editor and columnist George Pyle, welcome to you, and thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And as always, you can join this conversation with your questions and comments. Call us at 801-355-8255, or you can post your comments at sltrib.com. Let's start with Jessica Miller. Representative John Curtis left his position as mayor of the city of Provo to take over for Jason Chaffetz in the U.S. Congress in a special election. His tenure as mayor of Provo is maybe coming back to haunt him now because of some recent allegations that have come to light having to do with who knew what when. And Jessica, this relates to former Provo Chief of Police John King and sexual misconduct allegations against him. We've known about those allegations against King for some time now. Mm-hmm. What's the new part of this story?
So John King left the police department last March after a woman said that she reported that he raped her. And so he was kind of pushed out because of sexual misconduct. And now we're learning in the last year or so that he had been accused of sexual misconduct at his past jobs before he came to Provo. And while he was here, there were complaints of sexual harassment while he was here as well. So this week, five women filed a lawsuit alleging that their complaints of sexual unwanted sexual advances from the police chief had gone basically were ignored by Curtis and other officials at Provo City until this woman came forward last year and said that she was raped.
And this is, again, you said five women filing this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And they say that Curtis, John Curtis, when he was mayor of Provo, and other city officials essentially knew about this. They didn't really address those allegations, as you said, until this one allegation came forward. Mm-hmm. The Tribune actually spoke with some people who pointed to meetings that happened where these allegations were discussed at the Provo city level. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so there were two meetings that were discussed. One was in like 2014. Curtis, this is according to the lawsuit, Curtis had a closed door meeting with some supervisors and basically said, I don't want to hear any more complaints about this police chief. And this was shortly after a dispatcher had filed a sexual harassment complaint. Basically said, as long as I'm the mayor here, he will be the police chief.
This is what is alleged was said in this
yes,
meeting.
Yes, that's according to the lawsuit. And then we've talked with some city council members who said that in about 2015, maybe 2016, that they had a closed door meeting with the mayor, with the police chief, to talk about some of these harassment allegations. So this is something that had been talked about throughout his tenure, but Curtis has basically responded by saying that he acted appropriately, that he handled these complaints, that he only knew of two, one dispatcher complaint, and then this woman who had alleged the rape, and that led to King leaving Provo.
Has he addressed the statement that these women claim he made, that as long as he is mayor, you know, King will remain chief of police? Is that something that he's talked about publicly?
We've asked him that, and he hasn't responded thus far to any specific questions that at least from the Tribune that we've asked about specifics of that meeting or other specific allegations in that lawsuit.
And he hadn't, before this, this kind of story rolled out this week, he hadn't commented very much on this at all about this publicly, had he?
Not really. I did a story last summer when we were looking into John King's history and how he came here, and we had asked Curtis about whether he knew that there were allegations of a sexual assault in Baltimore shortly before John King came here. And at that time, he basically just said that he had no idea of this background, of his history. And when a Tribune reporter called him about it, was the first time that he was hearing that there was perhaps these past allegations of misconduct or assault.
What is it that not to dwell on this, but what is it that these women say King was doing? There's one accusation of sexual assault against him, and then now five women are coming forward and saying what?
So she is one of the five.
Okay.
So one does say that she was sexually assaulted, that he raped her. Prosecutors did screen that case, and they decided not to file any charges against him. And then the other four, it's kind of varying degrees of just, like, he'd come into the dispatch center, and he'd, like, leer at women. He'd look down their shirts. He'd make comments about their breasts. He would touch the dispatchers that didn't want to be touched. Put his hand on their leg. He would give these like side hugs, or one police officer, he'd like put his hand underneath her bulletproof vest and grope her breast. So it was a lot of more inappropriate touching. And then the most serious one obviously was the report of a sexual assault.
I want to get George Pyle's opinion on this, but actually first I want to ask, what does King say about all of this, Jessica?
We have not been able to reach King since he left Provo last March. So we've called him, emailed him, tried to find attorneys for him, and we haven't been able to get a hold of him. So he hasn't really spoken publicly about this since he left.
There's a new administration in Provo as well now, since the departure of John Curtis for Congress. It's Provo's first female mayor, as a matter of fact. Is there a different attitude in Provo now?
They've said that they're trying to be more forward-looking, that they are, you know, trying to make sure that they're policies in place where women can come in, or anyone can come and report sexual harassment. She's met personally with most of the police officers and the dispatchers to make sure that they know that if there's this kind of problem continuing, they can come to her. So she's trying to kind of like change that culture a little bit from maybe what it was a year, a couple of years ago.
George Pyle, I'm not even certain how to pose this question to you. It's allegations against a sitting member of Congress right now that he knew about stuff as stuff. He knew about these allegations as he was the mayor of Provo. He is in a re-election campaign. He's trying to. It was a special election to get him into office, and now he's facing re-election. Is this going to, first off, have a political effect? But also, what should we say about what these women are alleging?
Well, it seems to say how insidious that apparently this kind of behavior has been everywhere, and now apparently it's kind of like the Berlin Wall coming down. There's this dam has broken, and now all the people who have been silent all these years or who have been silenced all these years are now coming forward. They did a background check on the police chief, and nothing came up, so it's like, well, they're not looking for this, or it happens all over and nobody seems to think anything of it. especially if there hasn't actually been a criminal charge or a lawsuit, then they don't pick up on it. And it's just this male entitlement that is even more so when you're in a position of power over employees. And they, for the longest time, apparently, people think that this is okay in the workplace and you can get away with this. And now we've had this moment where people are standing up and saying, no, it's not okay. And in the case of, like, you know, when John Curtis was mayor, I mean, he was saying, you know, I don't want to hear about this anymore. I mean, that could be interpreted as, don't tell me what's happening. It could be interpreted as, I don't want to hear about it, and that means don't do it, so I don't have to hear about it. But either way, he is really kind of in an awkward position now, and he's getting out there. He's issuing statements. He's coming to see the editorial board of the Tribune later today, and it's he understands that this is bad, that this is pretty hot, and that he needs to deal with it.
Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that editorial board meeting. I'm sure we'll read about it. But that's an interesting point. What was hidden? I mean, this is sort of the extension of the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that previously had been hidden or maybe taboo or, you know, brushed under the rug are now are kind of wide open, and it's fair game to make it so.
Right. Well, and with some of these women, though, they're saying that they were talking about this even back then. This isn't just we're having a movement now we're doing it. And one of the dispatchers filed a complaint in 2014. Another one, when King left last year, said that she was treated or complained about the treatment that she had. So this is something that they're saying, you should have known about this then, and now we're going to file this lawsuit.
Wow. Well, let's move from this story to some other disturbing allegations. Some other disturbing allegations out there. This is much older allegations against the former president of the Mormon Missionary Training Center, Jessica Miller, you helped report this story, which emerged with a leaked recording at the Mormon Leaks website, and this is about a man named Joseph L. Bishop, who was confronted by an accuser on a secretly recorded audio recording. What are the accusations against Bishop? What does this woman allege?
So, I guess this all started in November. The woman told BYU police that she wanted to report a delayed report of sexual assault at the center from 1984. So before the officers had a chance to talk with Bishop, she flew out to Arizona and met with him, kind of posing as a writer, interviewing former mission presidents. And during this conversation, she kind of confronts him and says, hey, do you remember me? I was in the MTC in the 80s. You took me down to this room in the basement, and you, like, tore off my clothes and tried to have sex with me. And in the recording, he says that he doesn't remember this, kind of denies it, though when the police officers interviewed him a few days later, he admits that he did take the woman down to that room, and he'd asked her to show him her breasts. So that's... Yeah.
This ignited a firestorm on the internet. People were angry at this man who, in this recorded conversation, he describes himself as a kind of, predator. That the allegations against him were not that. Well, actually, he doesn't admit to these allegations, as you say. He says
he does say that he gave another sister missionary a frisky back rub, and maybe there's some other conduct with other women that maybe he had to have be talked to from his bishop or something like that, but he never outright said that he had assaulted her, the woman who's recording the conversation, or anything like that.
The accuser here, and I listened to this audio, or at least some of it, it's 3 hours of audio, the woman confronting Bishop is audibly angry, and this is decades later. In this conversation, she talks about her church, the church that she left, failing her because she tried to report this, she says, but it doesn't seem like much happened as a result of her reports, as far as we can tell from what we know at this moment, I guess.
Yeah, she said that she reported, I think she said she reported it back then, and then she had reported it maybe as recently as 2010, and the church said in a statement that they had reported that report to Pleasant Grove Police, but actually the Pleasant Grove Police were investigating a threat, maybe. So it was a totally different thing.
Right. Well, a threat against him.
Yeah.
And potentially by this exact thing.
Yeah.
What does the Mormon Church say about all of this? If you know, I mean, if you don't have that at hand, that's
I'm not sure I have it quite at hand right now.
That's all right. there is, I know, a statute of limitations. This took place so long ago that he's not going to be.
Right.
Charged with me.
Right, yeah. BYU Police did do their investigation. They forwarded it to the Utah County Attorney's Office, and they declined to file just because of statute of limitations. I think the statute of limitations then was like 4 years. So this is way past when they could prosecute the case. So
I know also that this woman who is unnamed, she's named but not named by the Tribune because
mm-hmm.
The Tribune has a policy of not naming victims. She asked, she requested not to be named. She says that she was in settlement negotiations with the church and before this became public, and that she was not the person who leaked this audio to Mormon League.
Yeah, she said that she didn't want this audio to be public, at least at this point, and that she was in settlement negotiations with the church. And I believe she's saying now those have kind of stalled. So I guess we'll see where that goes, if she might go the route of filing a lawsuit, or we'll have to see how that plays out.
George Pyle, I have a question that occurs to me right now. There were in this past legislative session, there was a movement to try and make Utah a two-party consent state for recording people, so that if I was to record you secretly, the way that this woman appears to have recorded this gentleman, that wouldn't have been legal unless both parties consented to doing so.
Right.
And from what I remember, there was advocacy from the part of the Mormon Church to make that law happen. I'm not 100% positive on that.
Yes.
This story may not have come out had that been the law, I guess. Do you want to comment?
Well, I think that was the concern when the bill was proposed, was that, well, why do you want this? We've had the law has been the way it is forever here, and nobody seems to have had a problem with it. And then when they brought up the bill, it was like, why do you want this bill? And nobody seemed to have a specific case to point to say, well, see, this happened, this was bad, this ought to be against the law, like it is in some other states. And the alarm was raised, well, if you're trying to make it illegal for one party to record a conversation without the other party's knowledge, you're trying to cover something up. You're trying to prevent somebody from recording wrongdoing or admissions of wrongdoing and making it public or using it as a lawsuit or taking it to the police or whatever you would do, and or blackmailing somebody. I mean, you could do that as well. And so the bill went nowhere. They took it back and said, oh, never mind. And then this comes out, and it is kind of like, huh, well...
Was this the implied question?
Well, I mean, did they even know about this? I mean, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were in negotiations, total speculation here, if they were in negotiations with this woman, maybe this is one of the things they were thinking about. But the recording wasn't even in Utah.
Yeah, it was in Arizona, which is also a one-party recording.
State.
So I mean, the recording was made legally,
mm-hmm.
and then the question is, well, what can you do with it? Well, once you've got it, it's out there. It's going to, and even this woman didn't even want it to be out there, and it's out there. So you can't. This is one about things. You know, we'll talk about Facebook here in a minute. You know, nothing ever goes away, and nothing is secret, and nothing is private. So be careful, even if you think you're using something for your own benefit or your own protection. You don't necessarily have control over it.
Get out of your hands.
Yeah.
Jessica, just going back to the story, have there been other complaints against Bishop as far as we know at this moment?
Not that we are aware of.
Okay. Okay. It's an interesting story. You can check it out at sltrib.com. Peggy Fletcher Stack reported it, so did Jessica Miller, and you can check it out again at the website. There's more to come on the show, including a complaint against Representative Mike Noel and the movement to abandon Facebook. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, back in a couple of minutes.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our members and AARP Utah, a nonpartisan social change organization with a membership helping people 50 and over improve their lives by providing materials, programs, and advocacy on key issues. More information is available at aarp.org.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. I'm Tom Williams, along with Katie Swain. Hope you're enjoying the program. Fascinating discussion there in the first segment. So this is the strength of the program. You get the headline, but then you get an extensive, interesting, informative discussion behind the headlines with reporters who reported the story, hosted by Roger McDonough. This is the kind of programming I tune into with fascination every Friday. And if you're with me, then now's the time we come to you and ask for a bit of financial support for the program.
I think the conversation, the dialogue, the analysis, the background, all of that is what makes public radio and indeed programs like Behind the Headlines, Access Utah, so unique and so important in our news consumption. It's not enough to just get the headline, but we want to see behind the headline, like this program. And Roger McDonough does an excellent job. If you tune in every Friday to listen to that and to get your Utah news and analysis, then give us a call, 800-826-1495. Go online to upr.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see your support, and we'd love to have your help in reaching our goals for this pledge drive.
And if you're listening in the evening, go online. We still want your support, upr.org, upr.org, and here in the morning as well, upr.org, 800-826-1495. Your support is very important. Add that to your neighbors, and we're on our way. The place to go is upr.org, and thank you.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW, and I'm joined this hour by Salt Lake Tribune Public Lands reporter Brian Maffley, Justice reporter Jessica Miller, Tribune Digital Life reporter Sean P. Means, and columnist George Pyle. It is our Friday morning local news roundup. You can join us with your questions and comments, and to do that, you can call 801-355-8255 or post at sltrib.com. Brian Maffley, over the past few weeks, we've had more than one conversation about Representative Mike Noel, and we have occasion to talk about him again today because of a complaint filed by an environmental group saying that Noel has not been an honest broker and that he's advocated for the construction of the Lake Powell pipeline when he stands to benefit from that. What is this complaint about, and who is making it?
Sure. Well, this is the third group to file a complaint against Mike Noel, who's leading the legislature this year. This group is Utah Rivers Council, a local group that advocates for keeping water in rivers, and as a result, they're deeply opposed to the Lake Powell pipeline ever being built, which would move a lot of water from Lake Powell over to St. George. So what they're saying is, you know, the pipeline is supposed to drop some of this water off midway in Kane County, and it turns out that it will be about 4,000 acre feet a year. It's a very small portion of the pipeline's flow.
About 5%, right?
5%, but it's still enough for 16,000 people, and which is more than the number of people who live in Kane County. So Utah Rivers Council really dug deep into the documents that got filed with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to get the permit for the pipeline. And what they found was, gee, there's this pipeline that breaks off the main pipeline and goes right up to practically Mike Noel's doorstep in Johnson Canyon, beautiful spot on the edge of the Grand Staircase, just east of the town of Kanab. And the pipeline goes up Johnson Canyon, very close to Noel's property, and it appears from the documents that the water would then be put into the ground to recharge the aquifer that Mike Noel happens to tap
for agriculture.
So the Utah Rivers Council is saying, gee, this pipeline project, which doesn't make a lot of sense for the residents of Kane County, sure would benefit or potentially benefit Mike Noel and make his property there, about 700 acres, more valuable, make sure he has water in the ground to tap. Maybe he could he could make a lot of money off of this.
Go on. And part of, I mean, I guess so. An aspect of this is also that Noel didn't disclose this potential conflict,
sure.
or at least not in the way that he maybe should have done.
Yeah.
And especially because he was advocating for this at the state legislature, he was a proponent of this project.
Yeah, he's very much. And Mike Noel's actually controls the public lands agenda in Utah in many ways, and he has a lot of critics in the environmental community, and there are been alleging for a long time that, you know, gee, maybe Mike Noel has some other agenda here to personally benefit himself. So what they're saying is there are all these laws that require you to disclose, and if you're a public official like the way Noel is, to make disclosures, and Mike isn't making those. And to his defense, Mike Noel is saying, well, these documents, the fact that I own this property is that information is available in the assessor's office, the Kane County Recorder's office, on the tax rolls, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not hiding anything.
And it's public information.
Yeah, and it's public information. However, the law does seem to require a lawmaker to disclose the property he holds that could pose a conflict of interest. And those properties aren't really disclosed in the various filings that he should be filing.
And this is the sort of personal side of it. I mean, how he could personally stand to benefit. I know he also owns water rights in this canyon.
Yes,
you reported that. Noel, in addition to that, is the executive director of the Kane County Water Conservancy District.
Yeah.
What role does that play in this?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kane County Water Conservancy District is the agency that is contracted to take the water. So it's not Kane County, it's the Kane County Water District, which serves a very small part of Kane County. So far, as far as I can tell, their only service areas are in Johnson Canyon, where a couple hundred people live in a very bucolic setting, and then far away from the main part of the county up on Cedar Mountain, there's a second home community up there that they also supply. But there's no way to get Lake Powell pipeline water up to Cedar Mountain. So it's all going to go to Johnson Canyon. And so what Mike Noel is saying now is, you know, we can use this water to supply the city of Kanab. It's the population center of Kane County. It's certainly growing. And so now they're kind of changing tune here that we're going to supply the city of Kanab. But how do you get the water from Johnson Canyon out of an aquifer there over to the city of Kanab, which already has its own water supply? It's all really confusing and muddled.
Does Kanab need that water, I guess, is another question.
Well, when you read these various documents that the state has prepared, you know, in 2011, no, Kanab didn't need the water. When they updated the document, Kanab does need the water. But nothing has really changed. So why that change? It's an interesting question, and we don't know the answer to that.
This reminds me, or this is somewhat similar to allegations made a month or so back about Noel
and
land he owns that was impacted by the shrinking of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, impacted in a positive way, I think. Or that's the allegation.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, Mike Noel has taken the lead in advocating for the getting rid of the Grand Staircase Monument. And that, you know, that wish came true partially a couple months ago when President Trump signed executive orders shrinking the monument. And as a result, one of Mike Noel's Johnson Canyon parcels, he owns many, but one which was an in-holding inside the monument is magically now not an in-holding. It's just, they redrew the boundary just slightly, so his property's no longer in the monument. That makes it much easier to subdivide, as Utah Rivers Council has pointed out. As an in-holding, you really couldn't do much with it.
And Noel says that essentially that he's not, this actually isn't a benefit because he would have maybe been better off had the National Monument remained the size
it was. He has said that, and maybe there's some truth to that. But still, it doesn't look good. It's kind of what the point is. So these other groups, they're called Campaign for Accountability and Western Values Project, have filed complaints or published these reports pointing this out. And Mike Noel has just brushed them off. It's fake news.
And he attacks them. I mean, he says that they're kind of in opposition to his worldview, and that they're advocacy groups, and so they have a stake in this, and they're trying to defame him. And he's kind of called into question their funding model, especially the Western Values Project in Colorado.
Yeah. Well, those groups are funded by an entity called New Ventures Fund. Mike Noel keeps talking about a prominent philanthropist named Hans-Jörg Wiest. He's from Switzerland. He lives in Wilson, Wyoming. He is a big-time funder of conservation, public health projects. And the three groups that are now coming after Noel all have in the past or you know, have some kind of funding connection to Mr. Weiss. Why that discredits them, I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the status of the Lake Powell Pipeline application and project at this moment?
Yeah, of course. That's a story that Emma Penrod's covering, and after many years, this 1,000-page-plus application was submitted to the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And because of the because it has all these hydroelectric components to it, well, it's all gotten kind of gummed up over, is this a hydro project or is it a water delivery project? Who has jurisdiction? There's a lot of uncertainty there, so it seems to all be on hold. Well, next time you have Emma in here, we'll have her.
We'll have that conversation, and she'll be able to tell us what's going on with the Lake Powell pipeline. I want to, George Pyle, I've got you quiet sitting over there. This is Mike Noel in the news again. Of course, he is retiring. Or not running for re-election. That is, what do you make of these? I guess questions being raised by environmental groups about how he could conceivably benefit from the Lake Powell pipeline.
Well, of course, the first reaction to reading someone so and so will benefit from the Lake Powell pipeline is no one is going to benefit from the Lake Powell pipeline. Not Mike Noel, not anybody else. Partly because it's not going to happen. It's going to cost $2 billion.
George is confident.
Which nobody has. St. George certainly doesn't have $2 billion lying around to pay for this pipeline. And by law, the beneficiaries are supposed to pay for it, at least ultimately. The state may front them, but the beneficiaries are supposed to pay for it. And they still haven't got a formula for how they're going to pay for it. And then there are some people who have done some calculations, and they're saying, well, if the recipients, if Washington County, if St. George, the biggest, the fastest growing metro area in the country, is going to pay for this, then the per gallon charge for water or the hookup fee for water is going to be astronomical, and nobody can afford that. Well, that's one way to actually finally do conservation. You make the price so high, nobody can buy it, but then who pays for the pipeline? And is there going to be any water in Lake Powell when they open the pipeline? I mean, the Lake Mead, they're having to dig lower and lower to get water out of that.
I have a question. I mean, this is Brian George's is questioning the, I mean, well, first off, the feasibility, but also the fact that it will ever happen. This is, though, sort of some, this is something that the state is pursuing pretty vigorously, right?
Absolutely. The state is very much behind this, and it's felt that this is needed to sustain the growth in Washington County.
Okay.
But, like as George pointed out, is Lake Powell even going to exist when this pipeline is built? There's no even guarantee for that.
The amount of water that will be there.
Yeah.
Guys, let's leave this story behind and move to another public land story from this past week, just so we can keep moving through our stories and get to Sean Means, who's waiting patiently over here. Historic preservationists, Brian, are sounding the alarm about a recent BLM auction, lease auction, oil and gas leases in southeastern Utah that overlap some very rich areas, archaeologically speaking. Tell us about these areas in question and about this lease auction, Brian.
Yeah. Well, I want to be very clear. This is not in the Bears Ears National Monument. Some of the environmental groups have been playing the proximity up, but these areas are Montezuma Canyon, Alkali Ridge, Recapture Canyon, famous place.
Okay. Sure.
These areas are east of Blanding. The monument is west of Blanding, their former monument. And these are areas that are just as archaeologically rich, with a lot of Anasazi structures, grave sites, you name it. It's got them. It's sparsely populated. And it is an area that has seen past oil and gas development. It's never been very productive. So for several years now, the oil and gas industry has been asking to lease in this area, and the Obama administration has under pressure from the National Trust for Historic Preservation, SUA, other groups, Friends of Cedar Mesa, have declined. You know, they've kicked the can down the road. Well, the can is now in President Trump's court, and he's promoting this idea of American energy dominance. And now they are finally making these leases available for auction. There were, very controversial auction was held on Tuesday online. And lo and behold, this company that no one's ever heard of, and there's no record of it anywhere that I could find, who bought almost all of these contested leases with rich archaeology on them. Who are they? I don't know. We did a story in the paper about it today, and if anyone listening knows who Ayers Energy is, just throw me a call.
Contact Brian Maffley at the Salt Lake Tribune. Well, it's an interesting part of the story, and it's one that, again, is in this morning's paper. Is the fact that, is knowing who the winning bidder is, does that give us a sense of the kind of activity? I mean, we know it's oil and gas leasing, but
zero. It gives us no indication of what's going to happen. Now, if it was a company like Anadarko that has drilled there in the past or in the neighborhood, or Newfield, or, a company we're familiar with, sure, we can kind of get an idea of what they're up to. You can call them up and talk to them. But this is a company we suspect is doing the bidding for another party who wants to remain in the shadows.
Sure.
That's what this looks like. And so there's this there's so little transparency with how the Bureau of Land Management leases its lands for oil and gas. And then when you talk about an area that is this valuable for its non-energy resources, you've got to wonder, what's is this the right way for us to be handling these precious lands?
There's a quote from Josh Ewing, who's the executive director of Friends of Cedar Mesa in Bluff, and he says that there has never been a sale with as much archaeology as this one had. And Brian, is this happening now because of essentially the tradition of not leasing these particular lands is no longer being honored because of a new administration?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and to clarify that, I mean, I think SUA might disagree with that. There are areas up in Nine Mile Canyon that SUA fought that were leased for oil and gas, and those were extremely rich as well. So, but that suffice it to say, there's one parcel where Josh Ewing told me there are over 200 archaeological sites on one of the parcels. Mm.
And this isn't that far from Havenweep National Monument as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit north. Yeah. A lot of these are a little bit to the north, and some of them abut Canyon of the Ancients National Monument in Colorado. I mean, they go right up to the Colorado state line. And then there's a couple that abut the northern end of the former Bears Ears National Monument up in Hatch Point. There's not a lot of archaeology associated with those sites, though.
Just getting back to the bidding process, in the past we've had protest bidders like Tim DeChristopher, who famously went to prison for his act of civil disobedience.
Yeah.
Is there any possibility that something like that could be happening with this anonymous bidder?
Doubt it.
Okay.
I really do. I think what Tim DeChristopher did that was of value is to show the public how important leasing is. The BLM keeps kind of dismissing the idea that leasing has an impact on the ground. Well, DeChristopher and others feel like, no, this is what enables impacts, and if you don't do it smart up front, well, you're inviting a lot of chaos down the road. And that's why, Tim DeChristopher went to prison over this.
Yeah. Is this leasing just we'll go to a break pretty soon, and I want to bring George Pylon on this, but is this leasing done on a speculative basis? I mean, does BLM choose these lease parcels based on, evidence that it could produce oil and gas extraction?
No, that's not how it happens. Industry or someone posing as industry, I guess, quote unquote, nominates a particular piece of land to make available for oil and gas leasing, and then the BLM studies it and says yay or nay, and then they have an auction, and they have these auctions every quarter. And what's so unique about this week's auction is how competitive it was. In 5 years of following these auctions, this one was the first one I've seen where everything that was offered actually got bid on and purchased. In the past, almost all the auctions I go to, half of them don't get the minimum bid of $2 an acre, and then many of the parcels go for the minimum bid, which indicates, well, why? Industry doesn't look very serious. Well, in this auction, everything got bid pretty high.
Is that because of rumors of there being something productive there, or is it because of this shadow company that we don't know about driving that kind of bidding happening?
Yeah, they were definitely driving a lot of the bidding. We got the bidding data on it. They were definitely pushing hard, outbidding others' companies. We don't really know. This was an area that has not been made available for leasing for a long time, so maybe there was a lot of pent-up interest. And so it got unleashed on Tuesday. Yeah.
Circling back to the archaeologists and the preservationists who are concerned with these leases, is there anything that they can do here? Is it just it's a done deal. Now we wait to see whether or not they get developed. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Right.
Well, no, it's actually not a done deal. So the BLM has to make sure they're selling the leases to legit people so that they have a week 10 days or something to evaluate that. And then on top of that, all these groups have appealed virtually every parcel that was sold on Tuesday. So they have to resolve those protests before they can be issued. So it's not a done deal.
Check out Brian Maffley's story this morning. It seems like a new day in the kinds of leases being offered because of, where this is happening.
Yeah.
George Pyle, columnist at the Salt Lake Tribune, what do you make of that part of the story, that archaeologically rich terrain is being leased that wasn't being leased before?
Yeah. Well, as Brian said, before, the Obama administration paid some heed, some respect, to the idea that you don't have to drill everywhere in order to drive all our cars, and places that have historical, spiritual, archaeological significance, you just stay away from those. Most of the oil and gas is coming from the North Dakota, private land in North Dakota anyway. So now, and a lot of times they'd put these things out for bid, and as Brian said, nobody bid or nobody seriously bid. This one, under a new regime now where it's online, instead of sitting in a room with a paddle, you do it all online, and that makes it even less transparent than it was before.
Yeah, you can bid it with total anonymity now. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. So, and there's always been concern that a lot of this was you would bid, you would get a lease, and then you would put this lease in your portfolio, and it would boost the value of your company.
But it might just sit there.
But you were never actually going to drill.
Hmm. Guys, I'm sorry. We gotta head to a break so that we can turn to the last segment of our last bits of our show. We'll talk. Check more of Brian Maffley's coverage out at sltrib.com. Thanks for this, Brian. When we come back, why some Utahns are saying goodbye to their friends, at least on Facebook. This is Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Back in a minute.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our members and Science Unwrapped in USU's College of Science. This Friday at 7 in the Echo Science Learning Center, do androids dream of electric art? With USU physics professor David Peake. Information at usu.edu/unwrapped.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Headlines. I'm Tom Williams. I'm joined by Katie Swain. We're enjoying the program. If you want to get informed, this is the program. We have it here every Friday. It airs 9 a.m. and repeats at 7 p.m. And so now's the time. We're coming to you and asking for a bit of support. We've heard some in-depth analysis and behind the scenes of the reporting of the very latest headlines from the Salt Lake Tribune, from the reporters themselves. The latest headline we would like to see is your pledge of support to Utah Public Radio. Very simple way to do that, upr.org. You can go to upr.org. Morning Only here, 800-826-1495.
And a couple of thank yous, Tom, from that last segment. We had a few donations come in. So Connie Charles, she writes, really like all of UPR's programming. Thank you to her and her donation. And also to AJ Albitar. Thank you for his donation as well. We certainly appreciate it. Nice to see some support and some love for Behind the Headlines, a program that I think all of us here at UPR really enjoy, and we hope that you enjoy as well.
And today's program is just a good example. Roger McDonough interviewing reporters from the Salt Lake Tribune on the stories that they have worked on or are working on. It takes you behind the headlines and gets you a lot of good information. Here's the way to support that, upr.org, upr.org. You could call our toll-free number, 800-826-1495 as well, upr.org. And thank you, a big thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW Public Radio, and I'm joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Sean P. Means, Jessica Miller, Brian Maffley, and George Pyle. This is our Friday morning news roundup, and you can join us with your questions and comments. Post them at sltrib.com or call us. 801-355-8255 is the number to call to do that. Sean P. Means, thanks for your patience and thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
People are fed up with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
The latest news is that an app developer was mining your data and the data of all of your friends and using it for political purposes. which sounds almost unsurprising, actually.
Right.
But there's a movement afoot to get off of Facebook. You spoke this week with some Utahns who are doing that. Generally, are these people concerned about their privacy, and is that why they're getting off?
Well, this has sort of been the final straw. The people that have been worried that their data or their information was being used in ways that they didn't care to have it used. And with the scandal that sort of surfaced last week involving Cambridge Analytica, which is this British political polling firm,
right.
Data mining firm, that has connections to the Trump campaign.
Right.
So of course now it's being looked at by the Mueller investigation.
Right.
Because we can't have nice things.
How many, actually, just quickly, Sean, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. How many of the people that you spoke with here in Utah talked about deleting their accounts because of Cambridge Analytica? I mean, as many as 50 million Facebook users were affected by that data scraping that Cambridge Analytica was doing and then sharing or using to help the Trump campaign.
I talked to a couple where this was it. This was the final indignity. They'd been thinking about it for a while, but this one just finally put them over the top. Including, like, there was a historian at the Church Historical Museum who, put on this very erudite, as you'd expect from a historian, thread on his Twitter saying, no way, no how, we're done here.
Wow.
A local rock musician did the same thing, which is a double bind for them because Facebook is also their sort of band page as well, and that's how they keep, book gigs and so on. Even though it is going to be some sort of sacrifice to them, they're working to stop it.
Okay.
Or we're going to be out of it. And then there are other people I talked to who have been out for several years to let them know that it's all fine.
Yeah, so. There were a few people who had gotten out or who were getting out because not so much because of the this privacy concern as it was about them feeling almost addicted, or that this had more to do with time management issues. Is that
right?
Right,
yeah. Right. And that the way you use Facebook, you're incentivizing things like conflict. The Golding, the historian, talked about how he wouldn't use the like button, but would actually leave comments on things, and because of that, his newsfeed was really boring because it didn't. Click the right button in the rat maze for to set off the algorithm so that you get good stuff.
Right.
And
you just get the same stuff over and
over. If you don't hit the like button, you're not going to get cool things to look at.
Well, if you don't hit the like button, you're not an actual person.
Right.
I mean, this is what it comes down to.
That's what Facebook has done to us. And some people are like, okay, I'm done with that. Now sometimes my wife talked to somebody who said, well, I'm going to quit Facebook. I'm just going to use Instagram. And it's like, well, Instagram is owned by Facebook.
Right. So. I want to throw this out to our listeners really quickly and ask, are any of you considering deleting Facebook? Have you already done it? And another aspect of this is it a force for good in the world or something else? Weigh in. Call us at 801-355-8255, or you can go to sltrib.com and post your questions there. And actually, I want to throw that question to George Pyle for a quick second. George, is, with all of its there are pitfalls to Facebook, obviously, but does the good outweigh the bad? I'm framing that question implies that there is at least some kind of goodness.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't exist, and it wouldn't be so ubiquitous if a lot of people didn't think it was worth their time and their energy. And most people get on it, I think, for two reasons. One, you really want to see those most recent pictures of your grandchildren, and we're all scattered now. I mean, this is a way that you stay in touch, and the part of it that I like, you stay in touch with people in places you used to live, your cousins, people you used to work with, places where you used to live, and you can kind of keep in touch with them a little bit without having to like write letters and keep a Christmas card list and things like that. So it's nice, but it can also be a huge time suck. You can sit there and stare at it for hours on end, that, and especially if you have Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these other things. But what we're really worried about right now is not the pictures of your grandchildren, but the polls you take, the surveys you take, the, which Lord of the Rings character would you be, things like that. And they mine all this data, and then they figure out who is susceptible to an anti-Black Lives Matter posting that will get people to go vote for somebody and or get them to not vote at all or various things like that. And in that way, you're being manipulated by people that you haven't given permission to, you don't know, you have no idea where they're coming from. Well, now, in theory, you could stay away from all that stuff and just talk to your friends and just and not even share anything except, oh, my God, that was a heck of a dunk while you're watching basketball.
Even
and stay
a,
out of that. Yeah. But it can still be.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I can get off of it right now because journalists use it as a way to bring people to the things that we've written, to the things that we've posted to our publications. And to completely walk away from it for us.
It sounds like you're in denial, George.
I could be. I could be requiring an intervention, which you may have to be responsible for.
And we also, I mean, we're also using social media to crowdsource. I use Twitter to crowdsource the story that I wrote.
Right.
To find the people that were quitting, that were leaving Facebook.
Or were no longer on Facebook because
right.
You couldn't find them there.
I couldn't go to Facebook to look. No.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you spoke with this this church historian who said that
I didn't speak to him, but he was quoted on
Twitter.
He was
quoted exactly.
Feed, yeah.
And there were others who were concerned about the sort of privacy aspect of this and the way that Facebook was sharing data. Facebook has announced some kind of measures that it's taking to try and deal with that. Can Facebook self-regulate on this?
Well, that's a good question. And one of the backlash to the backlash has been, well, don't quit Facebook. Stay and fight and try to rebuild it from the inside. And even Zuckerberg has used the R word, regulation. Hmm. And there've been calls, that Facebook should be treated like a utility, which is kind of what it is, has become.
Sure.
And be regulated as such.
It's a platform. It's a broadcast platform almost more than it is a company at
right.
this point.
Right.
So many.
Yeah. But the mentality within the company is still that we're this little web upstart, which can control, everything but the tides at this point.
Hmm.
And so if it is getting that big, maybe somebody outside needs to look at it and what agencies do we have to do that other than government?
I'm just curious if anybody here is not on Facebook.
No.
Brian Maffley?
Unfortunately, I'm on Facebook.
Just checking. Yeah. Jessica Miller?
I keep it for work.
Likely story.
Work only, yeah.
And Sean, you're on it.
I'm on it. I to my detriment at some points, but yes.
Yeah. George, how about that regulation aspect? I mean, do you think that doing something to prevent the sharing, the unwitting sharing of information, so that we get manipulated? And I would posit to you that we're probably all susceptible to some form of manipulation without knowing that we are.
Yeah, because we think of Facebook and Twitter as friendly messages from people that we know or relatives, and that's how it starts. And then all of a sudden, you've got this long list of friends. And who is this? I have no idea who this is. Well, it's kind of like your grandma's Christmas card list. You know, who is that? I don't know. They're on my list.
Yeah.
And so you look at it. The fact that even Facebook now is saying maybe we need to be regulated. That's kind of like, after 1929, the banks said, well, maybe we need to be regulated. It will help people have confidence in us to know we are regulated. And so that will be good for our business, as opposed to what we said last week, which was that would be a horrible, unconstitutional thing to do.
And maybe some of these people that Sean interviewed will come back to the fold after.
Right.
Or not.
At this point, the people who are leaving, that could be a drop in the bucket because it's 1.2 billion people on Facebook.
So is
Facebook too big to fail, Sean? I mean, if Facebook went away tomorrow.
Would the
world be better or worse?
Associated companies that had used that platform. Though.
Yeah, there would be definitely a fallout from it all. But like Facebook, losing Facebook or cutting out of Facebook is sort of like cutting out of the power grid. If you're doing it, you're basically becoming, backwoods sort of, cabin in the woods kind of person. So.
Guys, we have to leave it there. For those of you who are off the grid, we apologize. I don't know how you're listening, but maybe on shortwave radio. We're going to turn to our underplayed stories of the week, our final segment of the show. And Brian Maffley, ready?
Well, George brought this up. I want him to tell me which Lord of the Rings character he'd be. I'd probably be that dwarf guy with the axe, whatever. Clearly, the underplayed story of the week was my colleague Emma Penrod's story about Legend Solar. If you are interested or thinking about getting rooftop solar, read her stories. His company, Legend Solar in St. George, seems to not be able to figure the business out and somehow got Dixie State to put their name on their stadium. I guess that's not going to happen.
Very interesting story. SLTrib.com. Jessica Miller, your pick for underplayed story.
I'm picking a story that Taylor Anderson wrote. He seems to be writing the same story over and over again, it seems like, where an inmate dies in a county jail because jailers aren't taking their withdrawal symptoms seriously, and the family files a lawsuit. So he's got another one today that you guys should read. It's very sad.
It is sad. Check it out again, SLTrib.com. Sean P. Means, your pick for underplayed story of the week.
Well, quickly, we have the march happening on Saturday, the March for Our Lives, happening in D.C. and also in Salt Lake City, other places. Young people rallying to talk about gun school safety and gun issues. Corporations are sort of getting in on it. Kroger, the national supermarket chain, which owns the Smith's stores in Utah, they are pulling magazines with assault rifles on their covers off the shelves. And YouTube just announced they're going to be removing some firearms demos from their platform.
George Pyle, your pick for underplayed story quickly.
I'll say something nice about the legislature. Surprise everybody. It will be easier for women to get birth control devices either through Medicaid or prescribed by the pharmacist rather than the doctor. So they make all this noise about being against abortion. They've actually done something to actually prevent the need for abortion, which shows a level of intelligence I didn't know was there.
George Pyle, congratulating the legislature.
Bilbo Baggins over there.
Second breakfast. That's what
George Pyle, Sean P. Means, Jessica Miller, and Brian Maffley, all of the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks for being here. And thanks as well to our producer, Emily Means, and everybody up at Utah Public Radio. This has been Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. We will see you again next week.
Yes, you will. Tom Williams here with Katie Swain and Roger McDonough. Thank you so much to you and Emily Means, everybody there at KCBW. It's a great partnership. We also carry Jazz Time with Steve Williams Sunday nights. That is produced at KCBW Studios. A great partnership there, and Behind the Headlines is a part of that. We've had some people who approve of that partnership.
Yeah, again, during that last segment, we had a couple of people call or go on the web to donate. One comment here, Behind the Headlines is one of our favorite programs. We like the teaming up with KCPW in the deal. Keep it coming.
Great.
So big thank you for that love. Also, thank you to Don Veers for his pledge. You can go online to upr.org or give us a call, 800-826-1495, and you can show your support.
You're listening to Utah Public Radio, a statewide service of Utah State University and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences, KUSR Logan, KUSK Vernal, KUSL Richfield, KUST Moab, KCEU Price, KUSU FM Logan, also heard at upr.org.